Digging Deeper with At The Coalface, the podcast that shares the incredible stories
of the talented and passionate people in our industry.
This episode of Digging Deeper with At The Coalface, brought to you with the support of New South Wales Mining. Responsibly mining coal for today and tomorrow, with experts restoring land after mining at every single mine. And your host, Jessica Rouse.
Welcome to another episode of Digging Deeper with At The Coalface. Now, Anzac Day is not far away, and today we're catching up with a man by the name of Matt Clark. You might have seen his story around, but he was in Afghanistan back in 2012. He was driving a Bushmaster. There were five other guys with him at the time, and they, unbeknownst to them, drove over an IED. It exploded, and all of them miraculously survived. It's an amazing story, and Matt unfortunately had to finish his time in the army after this particular incident over in Afghanistan, and he's been working at Hunter Valley Operations ever since. But that Bushmaster is actually going to the Australian War Memorial to be a part of a new exhibit. So without further ado, to tell us all the details, Matt, thank you for joining us.
Now, I have mentioned already that you do have quite a story in the army and going to Afghanistan. Some locals may have seen that story around already, but I want you to take me back to where you grew up, because you grew up originally in the Hunter Valley.
Yeah, that's right. As a primary school age, I was more from Lake Macquarie, Kays Beach area, and then moved up to Cessnock going into high school.
And what did your parents do when you were growing up?
Dad worked in construction, and one of my first jobs out of high school was apprentice carpenter, working with the same company as my dad. So I'd done that for a few years before joining the army.
And the army was something that you always wanted to do?
Yeah, definitely. I ended up joining the army in 2009. So at that time, there was the whole GFC crisis, and the company I was working for was having a bit of trouble picking up new contracts. So I thought it was maybe my job wasn't as secure as I thought. So look, I've always been interested in the army, so might be perfect time to give that a go.
Yeah. A particular area of the army or?
I considered a few different areas, but I end up leaning towards the infantry. So joined up as a rifleman.
Yeah. And what's the process like for someone who doesn't know? So you join the army, you want to go down that rifleman path. How does it all work?
Yep. Once you go through the recruiting at Newcastle, I think can vary from a few weeks to a few months, that process.
Yeah.
But once you actually get the tick and you're ready to go, you go off to Kapooka down at Wagga Wagga. We did a 3-month course down there, so Your basic training. And then from there, you come up to the School of Infantry at Singleton, where you do another 3 months worth of training. And then from there, you're a qualified rifleman, and then you go off to your battalion. So either Brisbane, Darwin, Townsville, maybe Adelaide these days, I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's basically the process. Brisbane was where I got posted to.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd been in battalion probably 18 months or 2 years when I got picked to go on the Afghanistan deployment. And the pre-deployment was with another battalion up in Townsville. So we ended up moving up to Townsville for 5 months to do all the training leading up to deploying.
Yeah. And was that something that, were you ever fearful of going overseas? Was it something you felt was an adventure? What was the feeling around that?
One of the biggest things all the guys say, it's like you're training for a game of football that never comes. So it's like everyone's all excited for that aspect. It's like, oh, we're finally getting to go and deploy and put all this training we've been doing for years and years into action.
Yeah.
So I guess the whole fear and nervousness doesn't really come into it at all until, well, for me, it wasn't until a week over there that sort of got a little wake up call here and there that I'm like, ooh, I better start taking this a bit more serious.
So tell me about going over there. What was it like?
Yeah. When we landed from the plane, so the process from going from here over there was we left from Brisbane, picked up more people at Townsville, then went picked more people up in Darwin, then flew over to Dubai. There's an airbase there that you stop over for a couple of days of training, and then from Dubai into Afghanistan. And I just remember landing pre-lunchtime sometime. They put the rear ramp down on the plane, and you look out and it's just desert and then big mountains. And I'm like, wow, this place sort of looks like Mars in a way.
Yeah.
It's just so foreign compared to, you know, anything in Australia.
Yeah. You obviously may not be able to talk about it, but what was your mission over there? What was the goal of what you were particularly deployed to do?
Yeah, so we were a mentoring task force. So our job was just to work with and train the Afghan army.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just help them guys out, put them through all the sort of training that we go through and help them get up to a standard where they could stand on their own feet and look after the job themselves.
Yeah, yeah. While you weren't there for very long, did you get to interact much with the locals over there?
Not the locals directly. It was only driving around sharing the roads with them.
Yeah, yeah.
A tiny bit with the Afghan army.
Yeah.
The guys that we had with us, they were pretty good. They were very friendly, wanting to particularly see our equipment because we had extremely good gear compared to stuff they were working with.
And the story that a lot of people may have seen is from literally 3 weeks into your deployment over there in 2012. Take me back to then and what sort of unfolded on that day.
Yeah, 3 weeks in, it was a bit of a world's biggest. So the deployment was meant to be 6 months.
Yeah.
So you do the 5 months training leading up to it. Then you head over and it's like, righto, we're here for 6 months. And then we'd only just sort of unpacked our bags and done a quick handover with the previous deployment. We'd met the Afghan guys that we were working with and I'd taken one photo and I'm like, oh, I got plenty of time to do all that sort of stuff. And, we just met the Afghans we were working with. We'd stayed at their base for a night or two and then we were just heading back to our base to get some more supplies and heading back. So it was a pretty mundane, like standard sort of thing, like nothing particularly exciting was going on yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, got really unlucky, I guess.
Yeah, it was just a normal day that went completely the way you would hope it would never go.
Yeah, so we were just driving along. When you're driving on the roads over there that are all dirt roads with the civilians, they're all riding around on their motorbikes and little cars. So you know you're pretty safe where everyone else is driving.
Yeah.
As soon as you go off-road, you sort of try to make your own path and vary it every time, go a different way and just be as unpredictable as possible.
Yeah.
We just happened to get funneled into this one point where it was a dry creek bed and each side of the track we were taking was like 6 to 8 foot drop off. And we were the lead vehicle and there was myself and my crew commander. So we're the vehicle crew and we were traveling with the four engineers. So the engineers are the bomb disposal experts.
Yeah.
So I remember saying to their corporal in the passenger seat, you're the bomb expert, so point me in the right direction, tell me where to go. And we end up going through this narrow sort of creek crossing and looking back, hindsight, all the hallmarks of like where we should have been getting out and searching.
Yeah.
It was just that there was Afghan police checkpoint like 50-100 meters away. So we sort of used the logic of like, it should be right. Like they're there monitoring that point all the time. So
yeah,
should be all right.
And then not so right.
Yeah. Like we went through the crossing probably 5 Ks an hour and then just bang, massive explosion. First you just see like the flash of dark dirt and dust in front of you. Instantly you know exactly what happened. The volume of the explosion is just incredible. We were inside the vehicle with crew helmets on, so they got active hearing protection inside them, and just instant like ringing in your ears just went on for ages. And that just took ages. Like one thing I've described it is in the movie Saving Private Ryan, right at the start, they're doing the beach landing.
Yeah.
And they run in and Tom Hanks's character has a mortar or something go off nearby and he gets all like dazed and it was pretty much exactly like that. So there's a easy little visualization for people.
Yeah. Is it just a matter, like I've imagined it would feel like the longest time in that literally the split second that it all sort of starts to.
Yeah. I've thought about it so many times trying to work out how long was that? I'm guessing 30 seconds to a minute sort of in that dazed state. And then I'm like, oh, wow, righto, I'm okay. Go through your checklist. Like first thing I thought, how's your back? Like grew up with a dad that had big back injury. So I know how bad they are. I'm like, nah, my back's all good. I looked down and I could see my right foot just like shaking. I'm like, oh, that don't look right. Then I looked at my left foot and it's totally dislocated. And I'm like, ooh.
Far out.
Not good. And then after that, I'm like, oh, no, my mate was standing up out the top hatch. So turned around to check on him and he was knocked out by the blast.
Yeah.
He's got no memory of the blast at all. And we turned around and looked at him. He was just covered in blood and unconscious. So
yeah,
your mind sort of goes to the worst to start with, but he regained consciousness fairly quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was all pretty smooth after that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like it would just be like shit hits the fan. You've just got to, I don't know, gather yourselves together and work out, you know, what happened in those moments after. Were you guys getting yourselves out of the vehicle?
Yeah, I've told the story so many times and everyone's like, oh, you always downplay it so much. Like it's not that bad. But in comparison to other incidents like mine, we had a pretty good.
Yeah.
So one thing that generally does happen is they have secondary explosives around the vehicle. So once the guys get out and start searching the area, then smaller secondary devices take them out.
Yeah.
And then you start getting machine gun fire and rockets coming in. So we didn't get any of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were pretty lucky. We were way out, away from everything. So, yeah, it's pretty good from that perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Would you say the vehicle that you're in, a Bushmaster vehicle, that had a big part to play in the – it could have been a whole lot worse if you're in something that was less protective than that.
So those vehicles are a 14-ton armoured vehicle.
Yeah.
Like the tyres are 225 kilos. They're designed with a V-shape hull. So if you get a blast on one side, V-shape directs the blast energy up and outwards away from the crew. So it's sort of like a Formula One car. Like when they crash, they just disintegrate.
Yeah.
And you're just left with the crew compartment intact.
Yeah.
So all that energy is dispersed by all that stuff around the vehicle, I guess.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's a great design. The company that makes it, Talus, in Bendigo, I think, they're trying to organise for me and the other crew members to go down and do tour of the facilities and meet the people that make them.
So. Yeah. They've been around longer than I thought because I feel like the average Australian only really started hearing them about them when the government was sending them overseas to help in Ukraine.
Yeah.
But they've been around for ages.
Maybe 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a ballpark. I joined in 2009 and they'd always been around since I joined.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a good vehicle. And in comparison, the main base that you land in Afghanistan was called Tarinkout. That was the central part where all Aussies operated from.
Yeah.
That's where the airport was. And when I first left Tarinkout heading out to our patrol base, we went through this little vehicle graveyard and it had all the Ford Rangers and Hiluxes that the Afghans had been using.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're just normal cars. They don't handle the bombs too good.
No.
In comparison, like, they were all two-seaters, like, and everything from the tray forward, just gone.
So yeah.
You don't really need to ask what happened to the guys that were inside those vehicles. So in comparison, no Australians have ever been killed in a Bushmaster. Had lots of injuries, but, yeah, they've done a very good job. They've saved a lot of lives.
Yeah. Definitely. And tell me about, so you were obviously injured. Tell me about the extent of your injuries.
Yeah, so probably 45 minutes afterwards, we had the helicopter turn up, pick myself and crew commander up. We went back to the main hospital and that's where they sort of assess the damage and they sort of patch you up and send you back to Dubai.
Yeah.
And went back to Dubai for 2 days there and then 2 days later I was back in Brisbane. And where I stayed at hospital for a month. So that was the London 2012 Olympics.
Oh.
I got to hospital a day or two before that started and I think I got out a day or so after it finished.
Yeah. So, at least you had entertainment.
Yeah, that was my entertainment for the month stay in hospital. But yeah, during the month stay in hospital, I had 5 surgeries, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, a bit of damage. Went through reading the reports on all the damage. It was like 13 or 14 broken bones, both feet and ankles. So majority was the left side.
Yeah.
But so 95% of the damage was left side. Right side, yeah, it was pretty good. That's full recovery on that side.
Yeah.
Yeah, so after the month in hospital, it was a fun process. If anyone's ever seen those moon boots, I lived in those for 6 months, I guess. slept in them as well.
Which, on both
yeah,
feet?
Both sides.
Yeah, oh gosh.
Try sleeping in bed with two of those on for boots. Months. Not fun. But yeah, I was on crutches for 6 months.
Yep.
So yeah, that was a fun process. Just as the guys are getting back from the deployment, unfortunately, I had to go back in for more surgery the day before they got back. So I had all these plans of greeting him at the airport, but yeah, coming out of surgery again.
Yep.
So that was just to have half the metal pins and screws taken out.
Yeah.
And yeah, so end up after that doing probably 5 months of rehab on base. So it was Monday to Friday, probably 4 hours yep. a day.
Oh, wow.
So that went on for a fair while.
That would have, that sounds like it would be intense, 4 hours a day of.
Yeah, so it was just like a rehab where you go in, you do stretching,
yep.
work with the physio, do work in an exercise pool,
yep.
that sort of stuff. Just.
So how much of the metal stayed in your foot and how much was actually taken out?
So I've got one metal plate on the outside of the right ankle.
Yeah.
I've got one metal plate on the inside and outside of the left ankle.
Yeah.
And all the stuff in the left foot, that's all been taken out in yeah, that okay. second surgery they got the day before the rest the of the guys got home.
Yeah. Can I ask you about the obviously the physical injuries, but were there any mental side effects? Did you have any trauma after the fact?
One thing I noticed after coming back to Australia, when I got to the point where I could drive a car again, I'd be driving along and then just for random unknown reasons, I'd just be like, ooh, like start thinking, oh, that's a good place for a bomb. Like watch yeah. out for that sort of point. And that went on for months.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah
it was this involuntary sort of reaction. And then you straight away afterwards, you're like, oh, stupid.
Why'd you think that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
As far as dreaming about that sort of stuff, that went on for a little bit. It was probably for about 5 months that it went on for.
Yeah.
So coming home like a month into the deployment, the rest of the guys I went through my training with, they still had 5 months to go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that sort of stuff was playing on my mind a lot while they were still over there. But once they came back after the deployment, things really eased up a lot, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, yeah. So after your recovery in hospital, did that all sort of just mark the immediate end of your time in the army?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Because the injuries to my left ankle, I've lost half range of movement.
It's yeah.
been like that ever since. The doctors were basically saying, infantry work, you're carrying 40, 50 kilo packs. You're doing pack marches 15, 20 kilometers at a time. So
yeah.
they're like, if you do that, you're just going to destroy your ankle. Like you'd end up with major arthritis problems. So you're like, probably best for you to find something else to do.
Yep. And you did mining. Tell me what prompted your move into that space.
Yeah. Going through the discharge process, the army was really good. And since I'm from this area originally, I managed to get a posting back to the School of Infantry at Singleton.
Yeah.
So finished off all my rehab and, paperwork sort yep. of discharge process in Singleton. And then, for ages I was like, what am I going to do? Like I'd had all these plans for career progression in the army, what I wanted to do. And that was all sort of come to a stop. So
yeah,
I didn't want to go back to construction, carpentry either. So looked around, I'm like, yeah, there's all the mines just outside of Singleton. So I'm like, start give that a bit of a consideration, look and see if that's an option. So when I did the resume up, I really went into detail about, oh, I've got all this experience in the army driving heavy vehicles using radio for vehicle-to-vehicle communications and to sort of try to tailor it. So
yeah,
when programmed read it, they'd go, oh, this guy seems like a good fit.
And turns out you were a good fit.
It turned out well.
Did you find that when you started in the mining industry, obviously, we speak to miners all the time and there seems to be quite that camaraderie on the crew.
Yeah.
Did you find that was something similar to when you're in the army?
No. Anyone, like we're lots of ex-military at HBO.
Yeah, okay.
And anyone will tell you, nah, this is world completely different. But it's not bad. It's just totally different.
Yeah, yeah. So what's your role out there?
I started off as a trainee truck driver. So
yep.
did the crew relief for a few months. Then got upgraded onto crew and been there ever since.
Yeah.
So, yeah, majority of the time been driving their trucks, and after that, done a couple of years with scraper and a little bit of time on the water cart as well. Yeah, that's all I've been doing pretty much.
It's great that there's so many options. You mentioned there are a few guys out there who are ex-defence.
Yeah.
It's great that mining has so many pathways and so many options that you can really tailor the skills that you have to anything out there.
Yeah, there seems to be a, I guess you call it like a high success rate from ex-defence transferring over into the mines. So
yeah
it was a couple of weeks after I started, one of my best mates now, who I didn't know at the time, he was on crew, he come up to me at the crew hut during lunchtime and he's like, "Were you in the army or something?" I'm like, "Yeah, how do you know that?" He's like, "It's the way you talk on the two-way." I'm like, "Oh, jeez." I'm going to try to drop that. Try to turn that down.
That's funny.
Yeah, he's a good mate of mine to this day.
Yeah. You see yourself staying out there for near future at least?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
When you look at the roster, we're still on the four panel. So 2 days on, 2 days off. In comparison to every other job I've had, I've never had this much time off in my life.
Yeah.
So I'm only working.
You're half retired, basically.
That's it. Like 2012, I was only meant to be home for six to eight weeks out of the whole year. That was when I went to Afghanistan. So the 5 months pre-deployment training and the 6 month deployment. But yeah.
Yeah.
So this mining roster, from my perspective anyway, is pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd hate to go back to Monday to Friday, 7 to 3 or 9 to 4.
Oh, I don't even know what that is. if you could, would you go back to the army?
I certainly didn't want to get out.
Yeah.
I was really disappointed that I was told that I'd be getting a medical discharge and, you know, everything I had planned was coming to an end. But in hindsight, looking back, I wouldn't change a thing. I'm happy where I've ended up. The job in mining's been really good to me as well.
Yeah. And the Bushmaster vehicle, obviously why your story has gotten some attention over the last few months is because the Australian War Memorial are doing a big upgrade. They're building an Anzac Hall down there, and the vehicle that you were in Afghanistan has just been put down there.
Yeah, so the year afterwards would have been 2013. I was just scrolling through Facebook and seeing Australian War Memorial post, and they'd just taken delivery of this IED damaged Bushmaster. I looked at it and I'm like, that looks close. So straight away I went to my hard drive and I've pulled out, looked at all the photos, and I'm comparing scratches and the paintwork and chips all over it. I'm like, that's mine. I'm like, no way. And because I've still got the number plate of the vehicle at home as well.
Oh, there you go.
My sergeant got a big plaque made up for me. And
Yeah,
so I looked at the front of the vehicle that the War Memorial posted and it had a number plate number spray painted on. I'm like, got my number plate out. I'm like, yep, it matches.
Oh, there you
go. So, I got in contact with the War Memorial through Facebook and told them, hey, that vehicle you just got, I was the driver of that. And they had no idea of any of the vehicle's background or history. Uh-huh. So, they were really excited to hear our perspective and, the story that went behind it.
Yeah. So, because did you keep in touch with the other guys over the years?
Not really. Only like tiny bit here and there. So we were all posted to different units as well.
Yeah.
So once the deployment finished, we sort of got scattered to all over the country.
And
it's hard to keep up as well.
Oh, gosh, yeah, exactly. And it looks great what the Australian War Memorial is doing down there to preserve, more of that, I guess, more recent Australian war history.
Yeah, so that's the idea of the upgrade. So everyone that's gone through year six probably did the Canberra.
The classic Canberra trip.
And, they got the World War One, the World War Two, the Vietnam exhibits. So they're running out of room. So the old car park at the back, that's where they're doing a big extension. And, it was pretty exciting to hear that the vehicle that I was driving is getting put in as one of the exhibits. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good from my perspective. Bit of an honour, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
Like you look at it from the perspective that vehicle could be in there for 100, 200, 300 years' time, and like the tens, hundreds of thousands of people are going to come through and see it over the years.
Matt, what an incredible story. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Digging Deeper with At The Coalface. Today's episode thanks to New South Wales Mining, mining responsibly for today and tomorrow. Find out more about the industry's responsible mining practices and meet more great people from the industry on their social media channels. Now, wherever you are listening to this podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever it might be, make sure you leave us a rating and a review. And if you've got an idea for a podcast episode, or if you've got a story, get in touch, jess@thecoalface.net.au. We'll see you next time for another episode of Digging Deeper with At The Coalface.